Well, thanks. And I thank Allison and the organizing committee for inviting me here. It's my first trip to Sacramento. And, you know, I grew up in Africa where it is hot and dry, and I felt quite at home yesterday when I arrived here. So it's good to be home. So over the years, I've done a lot of research and talked a lot about Estrus synchronization and working on Estrus synchronization protocols. But in the last 5 to 10 years, what we've also decided to do is whenever we're developing protocols is to try and take a look at the economic impact of these protocols. And so a big focus of what I'm doing now is understanding the economic or the actual production impact on cattle operations as we start implementing a lot of these new reproductive technologies. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about some of what I've been able to do over the last few years in terms of monitoring the impact to an operation or multiple operations when we've gone in and implemented synchronization systems. And so to sort of get started, I'm going to talk very quickly about this this case study that we started. I work at the University of Florida, and about 8 years ago moved to the manage the North Florida Research and Education Center. And this is a beef cattle operation that has basically an Angus herd, a Brangus herd, and a Brayford herd. And so we maintain those three different herds, and we do a lot of different research on those herds. But the nice thing about that operation is that they didn't use artificial insemination or a lot of the technologies that we're talking about today. They haven't used those over a lot of time. So we had a clean slate to go into an operation that had not used AI, had not used a lot of the reproductive technologies, and so we were able to implement a set of rules on this herd to implement technologies and then monitor those technologies over time. And so I'm going to share some of that with you today. So one of the things that we know is that pregnancy has a 4 times greater economic impact than any other production trait. And whenever you read the trade magazines, you read a lot of the things out there, most people will think about birth weight or weaning weight or some of the carcass traits as really, really important to them. But how many of you on an annual basis in your own operation think, boy, pregnancy is my most important trait in my beef cattle operation? And so that in my mind is the most important thing that we were going to do. We wanted to focus on getting as many cows pregnant in the first 30 days of the breeding season as possible. That's what we were going to do. And then we would worry about the other traits over time. But we really wanted to concentrate on getting cows pregnant as soon in the breeding season as possible so we'd have a bunched up calving season. So we created a set of rules in this operation. And what we did is we said that every cow is going to have to calve by the time she's 24 months of age. So regardless of the breed, they were going to calve when they were 24 months of age. Each cow must have a calf every year. And so in this herd now, every cow, if she does not calve once a year, she is eliminated from the herd. And every cow must calve without assistance. So if we have to do any form of calf pulling, whether it's a heifer or a cow, we eliminate that female from the herd. And she must provide sufficient resources for the calf to reach its genetic potential. In other words, not only must she wean a calf, but she must wean a calf that is genetically capable of performing. So she's got to have she's got to produce sufficient amount of milk for that calf to perform. And her calf must also be of good genetics and perform. And then cows must maintain body condition score. What we didn't want to have to do, and we often go into a lot of beef cattle operations where they have to take their thin cows or their young cows and feed them separately from other cows. We do not want to manage different groups of cows differently because of their body condition score. So if there's a group of cows that is not working in our management system and maintaining body condition score, they're eligible to be culled from the herd. And then every cow that's crazy, that has a disposition problem, is eliminated. And for us, we're a research center, so it's an even more important for us because we have a lot of students running around. We just don't need folks being injured by crazy cows. But the other thing is that if you have one really, really crazy or disposition problem, it seems to follow the herd. All the other cows follow that one crazy cow. And so if we eliminate her, we can reduce the disposition issues in the operation. So we created this set of rules for every cow. That's how we were going to take this herd that hadn't utilized any selection for pregnancy, and we implemented this on the operation. And the other thing is that what we wanted to do, this is the second thing that we did, is that we were only going to keep heifers in the herd, and we still maintain this today. Over the last 8 years, we've done this, that we only keep heifers that are pregnant in the first 25 days of the breeding season. John Hall shared the same data set from Bob Cushman earlier today. And what this essentially says is that these are heifers that were became pregnant on the first 21 days of the breeding season, heifers pregnant on the second 21 days of the breeding season, and heifers pregnant after the first 42 days of the breeding season. And so here you can see the number of calves, the number of calving seasons from 1 to 9. You'll notice that those heifers that are pregnant in the first 21 days of the breeding season remained in the herd longer than females that were pregnant in the second 21 days or later. They did not remain in the herd quite as long. Their longevity in the operation was reduced, and that's this group of cows here. So for us, it was extremely important to make sure that we wanted these animals to be able to survive in our operation, and so we decided that only heifers pregnant in the first 25 days of the breeding season were eligible to stay in our herd. And so when you take a look here, this is the same group of animals, so their first calf all the way to the ninth calf that they produce in their lifetime. You take a look at those heifers that became pregnant in the first 21 days of the breeding season for their first breeding season. You look at the dark bars here. They're weaning calves that are heavier than those heifers that were pregnant in the 21 days or later of their very first breeding season. It took them about between 5 and 7 years to catch up before they were weaning calves that were equal to those animals that were not pregnant in the first 21 days. So that's another rule that we set for that operation. We're not going to keep heifers that are pregnant after the first 25 days of the breeding season. And it's based off of a lot of the data. And this isn't the only data set. There are several others out there. And so, you know, it creates a lot of discussion among our group at the experiment station. 2 years ago, we had a heifer, a fantastic heifer. She was by far the best-looking heifer. She became pregnant 34 days into the breeding season. And we had some scrawny little heifers that became pregnant in the designated time. And so what do most people end up doing? Most people say, well, we'll just keep that good-looking heifer. Well, we created these rules, and what did we do? We eliminated that heifer, and she'll probably become a very good cow in somebody else's herd. But in our herd, we're just going to stick to the rules, and I'll show you what's happened to the herd over time. So the other thing that I had to overcome when I went there is we had a staff that had never used artificial insemination. And I think many of you out here that may not use AI might be going through the same thing in your minds, but many folks that are that represent AI companies or are working with producers probably have to overcome this too, is trying to let people know that it really isn't that much of a problem. There are a lot of there is a lot of work associated with artificial insemination, but over time it just becomes something that you do. And so we had to get rid of some of the hassle factors, some of the things that in the staff's mind were just a hassle. Why are we actually artificially inseminating heifers when it's just as simple to turn in a bull? And so you have to overcome the mental part of synchronization, where you do have some extra work. And so the things that we really had to overcome is obviously complicated protocols and sire selection. It isn't necessarily fun. It's just it's a heck of a lot easier to go down to the breeding to the sale barn and buy a bull and stick him in with the cows, or just cut the fence and get your neighbor's bull. But that's the most simple thing to do, but that's one of the things that I think we should pay a lot more attention to. Hopefully this meeting is going to help clarify the issues associated with protocols. And really, when you narrow it down, there really are only about one, two, or three protocols that you have to select for cows and heifers. So it's not that difficult anymore. And I think certainly the semen companies and genetics companies and even the breed associations have certainly simplified bull selection, especially with the development of a lot of indexes. So hopefully that is becoming more simple. The other thing is reliable facilities. Having the facilities there to actually run animals through, and nowadays we have these turnkey operations where semen companies can come in and they can bring in breeding barns, they can bring in facilities, they have the staff that they can actually work your cows for you. But that's something I had to overcome there too, is making sure that the facilities were good enough that it wasn't a miserable experience running cattle through the chute. And then having the labor, the ability to actually artificially inseminate the cows, implement the products, and implement the right products at the right time. Okay, somebody smart enough to be able to do that, to actually read the label. So that's the third thing. And then the last thing is time. A lot of people don't want to artificially inseminate cows just because it takes up time. There's always something better to be doing. And so those are the four things that I really had to overcome with the staff, and it's a real problem when it comes to artificial insemination. But I think, this is something that has happened in that operation, and you'll see why, but now our folks embrace artificial insemination because of all the good things that come out of it, and I'll share that with you. So in 2006 and 2007, in that operation, they had a bull breeding season, and they tell me that it was 120 days long, but I don't have any records to believe that it was. I mean, I think they took bulls out when they felt it was about the time. But so about 120 days breeding season, and in my mind, that was a little bit long. And so some of you might think that is a little bit long. Some of you might think it's a third short, but... But for me, it was long. And so in 2008, I arrived there in the winter of 2008, and so we started the breeding season. And so what we did is we artificially inseminated the heifers on the first day of the breeding season, and because of some experiments that we're doing, we AI'd the cows a week later, exactly 1 week later. And then what we had to do is there were some cows that became pregnant later in the previous breeding season that we had to run through and artificially inseminate for the first time, sort of in the middle of the breeding season. And then we had some really, really, we call them the late, late cows. Those cows that calved after the start of this next breeding season, we had to artificially inseminate them. And then we removed bulls about 10 days early that first year. Then in 2009, we did the same thing. Basically AI'd the cows and the heifers about a week apart. We still had a late group of cows and then a real late group of cows, and then we reduced the breeding season again by about another 20 days. 2010, then, you'll notice that we did the same thing with the cows and heifers about a week apart, but we only had one late group of cows, and we removed the bulls about 8 days earlier that year. Now you can start to see that the hassle factors are being reduced a little bit, running less cows. We're starting to reduce the breeding season a little bit, and so we have some happier staff. Okay, 2011, almost exactly the same as 2010, except we reduced the breeding season now to something that's a little bit more manageable. And now remember, we have Brahman cross animals, Bos indicus-based animals, that we're expecting to become pregnant in 75 days. And a lot of people say you can't do that. Well, we're putting pressure on our herd for pregnancy. Remember, that's our number one trait that we're selecting for, and we're managing to do it. So in 2012, now after sort of committing to this, we breed the cows and heifers, but now every cow has calved before the start of the breeding season, and every cow is eligible to be bred on the first day of the breeding season. And then we remove the bulls about 70 days into the breeding season. 2013, we did exactly the same thing. So we went from handling cattle about 12 to 15 times down to now where we're handling heifers 3 times and cows 3 times, and we're pretty much done, and we remove the bulls. Okay, so it's a lot more simple for the staff that work there, and we've managed to reduce that breeding season all the way down. Any cow that is calves so that she does not fit into this AI period right here now is eliminated from the herd without She doesn't even go through the breeding season. Okay, so let me show you some of the data that sort of come out of that. And here I have, Dave Patterson showed a very similar slide earlier today, but this is the day of the calving season, from the first day of the calving season to the last day of the calving season. And each of these lines represents a different cumulative calving for each year. So this olive and red bar here, that represents those cows that calved, the cumulative calving during that year before we implemented any synchronization, so 2006 and 2007. And so every time a calf is born, you just keep on adding it here until 100% of the calves are born for that year. And notice that, look how spread out that calving season was, over 140 days before we got to 100% calving in that 120-day breeding season. Now look what has happened, and we didn't plan this, so I just started looking at the data about 2 years ago, and this is every subsequent year. So we went 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013. We gradually shifted the average calving season to the left. Cumulative calving just carried on shifting to the left. And so if I asked you, what year did you get the, if you asked me, I guess, what year did you get the best pregnancy rates? I'll say that I don't know. Our pregnancy rates during these AI seasons range from anywhere from 33% to 59% pregnancy rates. And I'm going to say something that I think folks don't realize. My goal, again, is to get as many cows pregnant in the first 30 days of the breeding season. And Mike Smith and Dave Patterson talked about the positive impacts of synchronization systems on stimulating non-cycling cows to get them pregnant. My goal is not necessarily to get the greatest pregnancy rates to timed AI. My goal is to include as many cows in that synchronization so we get as many cows pregnant in the first 30 days of the breeding season. And so we've ranged from 33 to 59% pregnancy rates. The 33% pregnancy rates were here, this teal bar, and the 59% pregnancy rates were the very next year, this orange bar. These two were not the two highest pregnancy rate years we had to timed AI. But because we'd implemented all of these rules and we stuck to a system, we still gradually move our average calving season to the left. Now, when you take a look at the, this is the mean calving day and overall breeding season pregnancy rates. What we managed to do the 2 years before we implemented all of these rules to these cows and the synchronization systems, overall breeding season pregnancy rates were in the low to mid 80% range. Look where we are now. We've reduced the breeding season by 50 days, and we've increased pregnancy rates by 10%. That's quite significant. Now, we're not culling. In our operation, we're not only culling open cows. We get the opportunity to cull pregnant cows because we have more cows than we need in that operation to maintain that herd. So we now can call cows that for whatever reason they're pregnant, but for whatever reason we don't want to keep them in the herd. The average average day of the calving season, from the start of the calving season till the average calf is born, has been reduced from about 80 days to less than 40 days, and then the breeding season length has been decreased by about 50 days. To me, this is the most important slide, though, and so. What I did here is I took and I put the actual calf value based on a common calf value, because you'll know that market prices have changed significantly over the last 7 or 8 years. So I wanted all the calf values on the same calf on the same basis. And so what this says here is, after implementing our synchronization system the very first year, each calf was worth $87 more than before we implemented a synchronization system the last year we did not implement a synchronization system. But look where we are now. Each calf that is produced is worth about $169 more than those calves that were born without extra synchronization and a lot of other management things that we've done. Just simply by putting some rules on those cows, we've increased average calf value into today's value. To our operation of around 300 cows, The income that we're getting now is $50,000 more than what we got before, just based on what we've been able to do with implementing a synchronization system and being committed to selecting for pregnancy, putting pressure on the herd for pregnancy. I shouldn't say selecting for pregnancy, but putting pressure on the herd for pregnancy in that operation. So now, what we do in that operation is I allow the staff to decide how to spend that money. Do you think that they care about running cows through the chute now? They don't care at all. Okay, because they get to buy more equipment, they get more trucks, they get to buy more tractors, whatever, because they get to spend this money. Before, okay, they didn't get that. Okay, so that's an extra $50,000 in their pocket to be able to spend on the herd to help them out. And so that's significant. And so we don't have any labor issues with running cows through the chute anymore. They know it works for them. Okay. Let me share with you a second case study, and this is an operation where we did an experiment 2 years ago on 1,700 cows on seven different operations, eight herds on seven different operations, and a lot of people have seen this data. I've shared it quite a lot. So these are the eight operations, and a lot of people, like I said, get very hung up on synchronization, pregnancy rates to synchronization. And they get a little bit despondent at times if they try it and they don't get very good pregnancy rates. And so these eight herds were all treated the same way with the 7-day co-sync plus seeder system. And you'll notice here that there are three herds that got very good pregnancy rates in the mid-50% range to the mid-60% range, very acceptable pregnancy rates. And then there's some pregnancy rates here that if most people had implemented a synchronization system, they might be a little more disappointed at. Okay. But so what we decided to do, and this was an FDA study, so we had a lot of data. We collected a lot of data, and we analyzed all of this data together. And what we wanted to do is see what was it about these three herds that was different from these five herds. And there were so many different things that affected pregnancy rates. But the only thing that was consistent among these three herds that was not consistent among these three herds is that these three herds had all used synchronization and AI for 8 years or more, consistently. These other five herds, no herd had ever used synchronization and AI more than 1 year in a row because they were disappointed with the results or they used bulls, they just didn't think AI was worthwhile. Okay, and so very often, folks are being introduced to a synchronization, they'll get these pregnancy rates and they go, geez, it just didn't work for me. Well, if they stick to it, over time, this is where they'll probably end up being just because they're committed to it over time and having a system in their operation. And so I guess that's the take-home message, is just sticking to a system probably has a far bigger positive impact on the operation than just trying it and saying it didn't work and then not going back again. So this is one of the good herds. This is the pregnancy rates from one of the good herds. These are the days postpartum in that operation. And when you look at this graph, you wouldn't believe that there are 400 cows in this herd. And look at the days postpartum, anywhere from around 80 days postpartum to 115 days postpartum when we went to artificially inseminate these cows. That's how tight those cows are. They're very uniform in their days postpartum, so you're dealing with a very uniform group of cows. So there's no wonder that they have very good pregnancy rates because they're very uniform. This is herd number five that had very poor pregnancy rates, about 44% pregnancy rates. Look how spread out these cows are. They're very well managed, 75-day breeding season, but look how spread out the days postpartum are in that herd. Okay, so you're not dealing with a very uniform herd. So this herd, if they stuck to something over time, you might be able to say that this operation might actually get better over time in terms of response to synchronization and AI. Okay, so the last thing that I'm going to talk about then is just some economics. And this is some work that we did about 7-8 years ago. And just having a look at the economics of implementing an AI program in the operation. And so in this experiment, what we did is we had we used eight different herds, and none of these herds had used AI before. And what we did is half of the cows in each herd we separated into two, and half of the cows we allowed them just to manage those cows just like they normally would in their operation. They just turned in bulls like they normally would. And then half of the cows, we exposed them to the 7-day coasting placenta protocol and time AI'd all of the cows on the first day of the breeding season. And then we naturally mated them for the same length of the breeding season as the control cows. The one thing that's important to note here is that the semen that we used here was a similar EPDs to the natural service bulls, because we did not want to look at the impact of the genetic improvement. We wanted to look at the impact of the reproductive management system on the economics down the road. And so when you take a look here, there are about 600 cows per group. And here you'll see this is the weaning rate, okay? The percentage of cows that were treated that ended up weaning a calf 18 months later. It's not the percentage of cows that ended up weaning a calf. It's how many we treated, went through the rest of that breeding season, went through a calving season, and ultimately weaned a calf 18 months later. And you'll notice those animals that were synchronized and we used timed AI ended up weaning about 6% more calves. So just exposing cows to synchronization now and timed artificial insemination, 18 months from now, when you go to wean those calves that you're producing in this breeding season, you're going to get an extra 6 calves for every 100 cows that you expose to breeding season than if you just turn in bulls. That's essentially what that says. And then this is the weaning weight in pounds per cow treated, not pounds per calf weaned, and those cows that are exposed to synchronization now versus if you just naturally service them, you get an extra 38 pounds per cow treated. And so when we looked at these 8 herds, they were nice enough to allow us to use the economics in their operations, and we had anywhere from a $6 loss in one operation to a $19 to $139 profit per cow treated to synchronization over cows that were in the control treatments. So on the average, it was a $49 advantage to expose cows to synchronization versus not expose cows to synchronization and AI. And this includes all the synchronization, labor, facilities, and it also includes costs of bulls. So we use a partial budget analysis to do this. It includes a lot of things that most people wouldn't consider in their own operations. So it's sort of biased against artificial insemination and yet still maintained an increase. So that was, we published that in 2011 or 2012. And so numbers have changed in the cattle industry over the past few years. And so this is something that I did last winter. I decided to use the same model and say, okay, you have a decision now to go and purchase bulls for either $3,000, $6,000, or $10,000 in your operation, or choose to use artificial insemination. You've got to make that decision right now. And so based on the data, we entered, let's just focus on a $6,000 bull. If you're going to, you've got to decide, I'm going to spend either $6,000 on my bulls or use artificial insemination. If you chose to purchase $6,000 bulls, you'll give up about $114 per cow rather than if you'd just gone and used fixed-timed AI and artificially inseminated those cows. So on the average herd size in the U.S., you would have given up about $3,800. But if you have a 100-head cattle operation and you decide, okay, I'm going to use AI instead, you'll end up bringing back about $9,000 to your operation. So for a $10,000 bull, that's about $12,000 extra dollars in your pocket by exposing cows to synchronization, rather than going and purchasing that $10,000 bull. So, I mean, I can throw models out all the time, and you may or may not believe me. So we created this AI calculator. If you have a smartphone, you can download the AI calculator. It's free. It's onto an iPhone or an Android device. And you get to enter your own information to see if that works in your own operation using your own information. You basically click this little button called the calculator. Okay, you enter different things, natural service eye costs. So if you're going to purchase bulls, and you still need to purchase bulls for cleanup, But for your natural service hire costs, such as maintenance of the ball, the cost of the ball, interest on the ball, things like that, you also include things such as your herd size and then your AI-related costs. And you enter all of these items basically into this little calculator device. If you need to know exactly what each of these items are, you just hit this little toggle switch and it tells you exactly what needs to be included there. It even gives you ranges in what that should be. And like I said, you include your cowherd-related costs, your AI-related costs. You enter those things. And then you hit this little button at the end that says calculate. And there are not a lot of things that you have to enter. It doesn't take that much. You hit calculate. If that comes up as green, it means go ahead and artificially inseminate. If it comes up as red, don't AI. Go ahead and purchase the bulls in your operation because it's AI is not going to be worthwhile in your operation. So, and then we have a Facebook page to troubleshoot. So we get a lot of people that try and ask questions on the Facebook page too. A lot of people don't have smartphones, so we created the Excel-based version. It's exactly the same with the same entries, and while you're entering information, it makes the adjustments on the side there for you with the partial budget analysis. And so if you want to change, like, bull price, then let's say from a $3,000 bull to a $6,000 bull, it makes the changes on the side there for you. And so we have an Excel-based version. You can access it here, but we have changed the website, so at the end of the presentation, write down my email address and email me, and I'll send you the Excel-based version if you'd like. So with that, I thank you. I know that towards the end of time, so thank you, and I'll turn the mic back over to the chair. Thank you.